edition, the interviews from C2E2, part two.
The sober ones.
Yes. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our last rendition that we just put up earlier this week. Now we have, as Derek said, our sober ones, or should I say we were hungover in the morning doing some.
You know, I really wasn't that hungover.
You know how I get at the cons, though. I was a little...
Yeah. It was more con hangover than actual hangover.
True, true.
Yeah. Yeah, this was... We've got a whole smattering of guests in here. Got some surprises that we weren't necessarily expecting, which were awesome. So, Tony, why don't you kind of list off a couple of the people that we'll be hearing from here on this episode.
All right. A couple of people that we interviewed, Claudio Sanchez and Chandra Eckert, for the book Translucid, which we had rave reviews for a couple weeks ago.
Yep. You know, talk to them briefly about, you know, Amory Wars and the tie-in with Coheed and Cambria on there as well. Got to talk to Joshua Hale-Fialkoff, which that was a big thrill, because you've been hearing us rave about The Bunker, but, you know, he writes tons of stuff, so that was a lot of fun.
Josh Williamson was also... Right next, and we got another interview right now. The two Joshes in a row.
Yeah, that was one of the surprise guests. I wasn't expecting us to get to talk to him. You know, great writer from Ghosted. We also talked to colorist extraordinaire Justin Ponser, and
that was our first colorish. So
yeah. So popped that red cherry because they got colored.
Yep. Then we got to talk to Kevin Mellon, and we also bought some of his books because they were that good.
Yeah, and that one was, we attempted to do one the evening before, but due to us being in the Windy City, it messed up the sound quality something fierce.
Just one thing that we need to say. It's so weird that the background noise of the convention or when we're at the bars doesn't pick up as bad as wind does. This thing, this recorder is amazing, except for wind. That's its kryptonite.
You know, I think the funny thing was when I was trying to explain to Kevin was that I would have rather listened to a baby scream in my ear for like an hour than try and listen to that interview. It was so bad.
Yep. And last we have Ryan Lee and Chris Mewes, who I think that's our last interview ever as far as what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you're just going to have to listen. But, you know, they were our very first interview that we ever did. I don't know if we put them up in that order or not, but they were our very, very first interview that we ever did. So enjoy, guys, and we'll be back here at the end to, you know.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. Ooh, are we going to actually wrap? Ice Ice Baby? All right, well, it is Sunday morning back here on the floor at C2E2, and Tony and I are here with Mr. Joshua Hale-Fialkoff. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing awesome.
It's a little hungover, but...
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm a little hungover, and I didn't even drink. I'm just...
It's the con hangover.
Yeah. It's no. We've been here. My wife, daughter, and I have been here since Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
And my wife had some... My wife is promoting a book that she wrote, and Dvorak, Hollywood's Forgotten Rebel. It's terrific. You should read it. It's about an old movie actress from the 30s. And so she did some screenings of her movies around Chicago.
Oh, very cool.
And introduced them and did book signings. So it's been like a double business trip.
Now, nice. Okay, well, you know, we're all for plugging. Where can people find that?
It's on Amazon. You can get it off Amazon or at your local bookstore.
Okay.
It's published by University of Kentucky Press.
Awesome.
So. Cool, cool.
Well, the books that we've been reading of yours lately was... Tony was big on the Cataclysm
Hunger.
And the Hunger,
mm-hmm.
And I'm in love with Bunker right now.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, so well, for people that may not have heard of you, can you kind of give a little brief background of, you know, kind of where you came into the comic industry?
Yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. I started in web comics. I did mini comics for a while. I did some anthology books that I self-published. Probably my first book that people know is a book called Elk's Run that was published by Random House. Which is sadly out of print, but coming back next year, I think. We're going to have it back in print. And then I did a book called Tumor that was nominated for an Eisner. And a book called Echoes. And now I'm working on a book called The Bunker for Oni Press.
And you did some work, was it on, the Fantastic Four?
I'm doing Ultimate FF right now.
Ultimate FF.
Oh, I did iVampire at DC. People know me from iVampire, I think.
Yeah.
I was at DC for about 2 years, and then I've been at Marvel for the past, like, year and a half now.
Okay.
Working on stuff.
Now, I'm curious about Bunker, because I didn't realize that
that this was digital first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, did I hear correctly, this has been picked up for TV?
I've heard that too. That is an interesting rumor that I can in no way confirm.
Okay. Well, it's a
we've heard it.
Well,
I heard you guys say it.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
That is a great rumor. Yeah,
that is a great rumor.
Yeah, and it would be awesome.
It would be fantastic.
It would
be very nice.
So, talk about Bunker. I've tried explaining this a little bit, you know, to my friends and to our listeners at home.
Do you want me to I can do it. Like I've gotten very good at pitching it. I can do it. I can pitch it usually in a sentence and sell it. That's the key.
Okay.
So it's about a group of friends who find a military-style bunker that contains letters from their future selves telling them that they're going to cause the apocalypse.
Yeah. And
then if they're like, if people are still a little wobbly, if they're still not sure, you say, so then they have to decide if they're going to throw away their lives, you know, in order to save the world, or if they're selfish and they're going to try to, you know, get everything they want at the cost of the world around them.
No, I thought, well, obviously, I can't doubt what you are writing about. I thought, though, that they were saying, though, too, that they needed to make this happen because it'd be worse if they didn't, though.
Everyone has sort of a different goal.
Yeah, there's a different agenda
for
every character.
They're not all working towards the same thing because every person is selfish. Every person sees the world through their own point of view. So each of them have what they think is the solution. So you have one character who is going to create this, you know, Frankenfood that's going to wipe out mankind, but at the same time, it's also going to feed mankind. So what do? You just walk away from that? Do you just say, like, oh, well, I guess we'll just go do something else? Or do you say, like, no, I'm smart enough to invent this, then I'm smart enough to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's always ego involved.
It's all about, you know, that's what the book's about. It's about our own egos, about, you know, we frequently, without foreknowledge, we know when things are going to go badly for us, right? Like, we know, like, oh, this is not going to work out, but we do it anyways.
Yeah.
That's just something that's, like, inherent to us as a species, where you just do bad things, whether it's over drinking, you know, drinking and driving,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, hooking up with somebody at a party, like, the little, like, literally, it's, like, little kind of, you know, fleshy things that we do, fleshy, hey. It's things that we do every day that are just, we know are not going to end well, but we do them anyways.
Yeah, every choice has a consequence.
Yeah. And even knowing what those, the question becomes, if you knew what those consequences were, would you still do those things? And, you know, at least for now in the book, the answer is yes.
I've always loved a good time travel story, Terminator, Back to the Future, everything. And what I love about this is that it is part time travel, but not, and how it's a different feel of, holy shit, they know what they can't. And as you were saying earlier, so I really enjoy this different take on knowing the future. Can you fight the future? Can you not?
What I like to think of it as no sci-fi.
Ooh.
Like, so there's no sci-fi in the sci-fi. Like, the sci-fi part is almost beside the point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really about characters. And if you look at, like, those movies, you know, to some, Terminator, like, Terminator is kind of barely about, it's about time travel, but it's really about this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Back to the Future, like, Back to the Future is about finding out who your parents really are. Like, that's something very grounded and very earthy. And I think what you see with science fiction is there's this tendency to alienate. There's a tendency to worry about spaceships and star battles and all that stuff, when the fact is, like, no, it's actually about characters. It's actually about who these people are, and that's what people respond to.
Yeah, where the time travel or whatnot is basically just the vehicle,
right,
to get to the character story.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm curious, and actually, before I ask this question, I have to tell you, when I tried explaining this to my friends, mm-hmm. and I first started reading it, and they found the bunker, I was so happy with the one line
mm-hmm.
in the book where you reference, hey, has anybody seen Lost?
Yeah.
And I was like, that is so perfect, because it was just dead on. And I tried actually using, like, when explaining to friends, especially outside of comics,
right,
about the story, that are more TV people. I said, you know, I said, it's a little bit of the hero's aspect of knowing what potential outcomes could be.
Right.
I said, and it's very similar to Lost in the flashback sequence,
right,
more sense. You know, and they're like, oh, okay. And that seems to have kind of gotten them. My question, though, is when you have something like this and you're dealing with future events, do you have a definitive end in mind for this story?
We know what happens at the end. We know a good amount of what happens in the middle. But it's also, you know, the response to the book has been so much greater than we thought it would be. Like, people have really gone bananas for it, and it's sold really well. And so it's one of those things where you get to suddenly you're like, oh, I get to actually open up my plans. I get to actually take my time and really, you know, dive into the story and tell it the way I want. And that's part of why we moved from digital to Oni Press, is Oni's giving us the support and the infrastructure to let us keep telling our story.
Yeah.
You know, for as long as we want to.
And I was reading the letter columns in issue 3 last mm-hmm. night, and I saw the one guy who had written in, you know, from the Detroit area, and we're Michigan people ourselves, that, you know, he went to a couple shops and he couldn't find it. But I think the word of mouth on this book is spreading so fast.
Yeah. You know, well, no, even just at the show, like, we sold out by the middle of Saturday.
Yeah.
So we've been sitting here with a sign that just says sold out.
Yeah, of everything.
Of everything. Yeah. You know, so like, when people hear about the book, it really works. And it's really gratifying, because it is. It's something Joe and I did this without any support. We just sort of jumped into it because we both really loved it. And so to do something you love and have it succeed is really, really, really gratifying.
Yeah.
It feels great.
Well, it's a solid book. I mean,
thanks,
God,
man.
It's so, like, it's one of those books when I get it. I have two types of books when, as far as the ones that I'm really excited to see each week. There's the ones that I have to read right away because they're I know that they're going to be fairly quick. I'm not going to be too involved. And then they're the ones I hold till the very end.
Right.
Because I just want to sit and just chew them all up, and that's what this book is to me. So it's been fantastic. I'm loving it. Tony's on board. The other guys, you know, in our podcast are on board. And, yeah.
Well, so, thank you.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that anybody should know that's coming up?
We got The Life After, which is my second ongoing series at Oni Press, which is going to start in July. That's about a guy who finds out he's living in the afterlife for suicides.
Oh.
So yet another fun adventure book.
Yeah.
We got that. My daughter just walked up. Honey, do you want to say anything on the interview?
What was that?
I'm enjoying the bunker.
Are you enjoying the bunker?
No.
She wants to know.
I love the bunker.
She's been sitting at the table this weekend and last weekend we were at WonderCon.
Okay.
So she has been sitting at tables with me, so she can do the whole pitch.
Awesome.
She's a pretty good saleswoman. She does pretty good.
Yeah, and she's cute as a button.
She
so
is
I mean,
cute
it's
as
like,
a button.
You know, who's going to say no to that? She it's no wonder
cute.
You're sold out.
I know. And and for my cute as a button daughter, I also have the Devilers from Dynamite, which is about exorcists who are fighting a war with Satan. It's like The Magnificent Seven meets The Exorcist.
Remember seeing those pictures and that toad that Kevin was freaked out about?
Yeah. One of the guys on our show, he can't handle anything scary, kind of gory, like
this
odd.
Is all of those things.
Yeah.
We saw the previews of it and we're talking about it and, he was like, I don't know if I could look at that just because of it.
Yeah. Now, where can people find you online? And
I run. So my Twitter is at Josh Fialkov, FIALKOV. I have a Tumblr, which is joshfialkov.tumblr.com. And I also am doing a process blog where I talk about writing. Every day I post a writing, something that I learned that day or something I use that day as a writer.
That's awesome.
And that's howfialkovdo.tumblr.com. Or you can just go to my main Tumblr and I retumble everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll do it pretty much.
Fantastic. Well, Josh, thank you so much. Loving the book. Can't see more what's coming out.
Thank you guys so much.
Right.
Thanks for reading.
All right. Cheers, guys.
All
right. Well, we just finished up talking to Joshua Hill Fialkov, and we have a very new surprise guest. Surprise guest.
Well, this is Joshua Williamson. I write Ghosted for Image. I'm going to be doing a Nail Biter with Image. It starts on May 7th. I do Captain Midnight and Predator for Dark Horse, and I'm going to be doing RoboCop for Boom. And there's more stuff coming, but that's the stuff right now.
That's a lot of
announced
stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird with that stuff because it's always like it's still me. I'm still putting my kind of thing on everything, and that's what matters, you know.
For me, I can't wrap my head around it because I'm not a writer or an artist. I like to consume the products that you guys create. But how do you keep so many different stories straight at the same time?
Notebooks, charts. It does. There are times, I mean, I've had moments where I've been writing a script and like typed in the wrong name. You know, I've written like, I'll be writing, one that was a big one, it was kind of a joke, was on Nailbiter. I kept writing Jackson in for one of the characters, because Jackson's the main character of Ghosted.
Yeah.
And so in Nailbiter, I kept on typing in Jackson for some reason, one of the characters. And I was like, they're so different, but I guess they're not really. You know, if I'm constantly doing that. And it got to the point where I was always catching and editing it. But then eventually there was one script where the artist was like, yeah, this is Jack's not through. This is a new character. And I'm like, oh, no. No, I'm sorry. But mostly I have a lot of notebooks. Like, I keep notebooks and everything. I have I have notepads and post-it notes, but I have, like, specific notepads, like, this is what I'm doing, this is the work I got to do today, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Awesome.
So how did you get in the business?
Jeez, man, I think, like, the hard way, I guess.
Is there an easy way?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think anyone said the easy way yet. Man. I want to know that.
I feel like there's some easier ways. No, I started doing mini comics back in 2002, and then started doing, like, self-published in 2003, and just going to the shows every year, going to San Diego and Wizard Worlds, whatever, making my little mini comics or making myself publish stuff and handing it out. I was an art director at the time as well. And so I was really trying to get in as being like an art director or an editor at publishers. But to do that, you need experience making books. And I just was like in a weird zone, so I couldn't really get much experience except for making the books.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept making the comics, and I was sending them in as examples of like, look, I can, you know, I can make comics. And eventually they just hired me because they liked the writing. So it's kind of like I was trying to get in as an editor and art director and ended up getting in as a writer, which I was like, that's fine. I get to work from home. It's awesome.
One of the things that we're always interested about when it comes to the process of making books is mm-hmm. the relationship that you have with the different artists.
Yeah.
And I know that that writers may script differently for different people. Do you script in just one way? Is it dependent on the artist and the relationship?
My format's always the same, but there are looser stuff. I mean, like with Captain Midnight, I mean, there's a lot of detail, because also Captain Midnight, the artists in that book traditionally haven't spoken much. They don't speak English.
Yeah.
Right? Or it's not their first language. So with those, it's much more plain. It's much more like things can be translated, understood. It's not much. But we say like Nailbiter. Nailbiter, I'm pretty fast and loose with stuff. I'm very much having a conversation with the artist.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we'll do is with that particular book, because it's so fast and loose, him and I will chat over like every single page.
Okay.
Like we get into G-Chat or text each other. We talk about every single, like he'll do quick roughs. Everything that we go through, and I'm like, oh, I meant this, or that looks better, you know, and kind of going through. It just depends on the project sometimes, you know. Like, I think with RoboCop, I've been writing a little bit differently because with that, I'm trying to make, I don't know, I'm putting a lot of fun into stuff that no one will see. It sounds silly, but it's like my artists and my editors and MGM are the only ones who probably will ever see my panel descriptions. And I'll put, like music links in there.
Okay.
You know, and things like that. So I'm like, there's a scene issue two that I think is like a badass scene, and I was like, so when you're reading this part, you really need to play Bad to the Bone when you get to this scene, you know? And everyone's like, yeah, we totally play, we're reading it. It like adds to it. And I'm like, yes. All right, I'm tricking awesome. You. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like having like the bonus track on the DVD.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just depends. What are you going
to say? I was going to say, I know that artists have a little more free reign of being able to draw in Easter eggs. Have you ever did that with some of your books? Like, just tell the artist, hey, I really want you to, like, put in my buddy in the background, or...
Oh.
Or write little notes, maybe, into dialogue that...
Only once, actually. What were you going to say with the dialogue?
Well, with the dialogue, you know, maybe a little phrase that somebody else is going to catch, but it works totally great for the story, but...
Yeah, there was a... I mean, I put little jokes in there. I think issue 9 of Ghosted had a bunch of that, because I had people online that were commenting on it, because... In the issue 6 through 8, there's this thing where these bad guys keep promoting this thing called the darkness. Like, we're gonna take you to the darkness, but we don't show what it is. And then finally they catch Jackson, and they're taking him to the darkness, and they finally get there, and he's like, oh, it's just a big pit. He's like, I was hoping it was a hairband. Like, that was a joke I was hoping, like, nobody would get, you know? But then a bunch of people online were like, I love the darkness, that was hilarious. And then somebody else, there's a part where he gets basically attacked by a bunch of ninjas. And he's like, well, if it isn't ninja rap... And I was like, no one will get that. But see, look at you just now. You're like, yeah. And a bunch of people online were like, oh, man, I was laughing my ass off of that part. And I was like, all right, cool. With putting people like friends in, I never really do that. Partially because I write a lot of horror comics, so I guess I'd be killing them off if I did. I only did that once with Xena Hawks. I put a friend in there, and that was it. Most times,
you know
most
what?
Times, no.
You know what, though? I will say, one of my friends just killed me off in his book. And I got to admit, like, it got me a little teary-eyed. You know, I was like, aw.
I've died, because John Layman likes to put me in stuff. I died in an issue of Detective, and then I died way back when in Sentinel Squad, an X-Men book, like, years ago. I was one of the Sentinels in that, and then I... The Sentinels. Remember they had drivers?
No.
It was an X-Men book called Sentinel Squad, where it was Sentinels, but they had drivers, and like
oh, wait, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Rhodes was one of them, yeah. Right? Yeah, so I was one of the drivers, and I got killed off.
Yeah. That's...
Did you have at least a line?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, I had like a whole scene. It was awesome. You gotta do it, you know? But yeah, with the scripts, I mean, it just depends what it is. Like with Ghosted, it's such a... Like, Gore and I worked with each other for a while, and we started to develop a relationship. And then with Davide, who's a new artist on it, Davide John Felice, he's been on it since she's six. And at first, it was, like, really, you know... You know what it is? I think it depends on how far in the arc you are. Like, with Ghosted, 12 was the beginning of a new arc. Like, 11 is a standalone that Goran did, but 12 is Davide again. And with that one, because it was the beginning of a new arc, and there's, like, two new characters, there's a lot of new scenes, mm-hmm. I had to... It's dense.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on.
Makes sense.
Then once you start going deeper, it's, like, looser and looser. With, you know, with Nailbiter, I'm pretty loose with that. I mean, really, for me on that one, it's all about pacing and making a horror comic.
Yeah.
You know, so that one, I'm very much more focused on the idea of, like, page turns and trying to do those little horror pacing beats that'll freak you out when you're reading it, the way you would when you're watching a movie and you hear the music,
yeah.
You know, and you know something's going to jump out at you. I try to put that in the comic. So a lot of my focus is on that and the dialogue. When it comes to stage direction, I just sort of leave that all to Mike. I really am just like, Mike, this is what we're thinking about doing. Sometimes I'll set the stage where I'm like, here's what the scene is, here's what's going on, here's where everyone is. And then after that, it's real simple.
Okay.
It just depends.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you the one thing. I know, like, at the local shop that we go to, Ghosted is one of the most popular books in the store.
Oh, man, thanks a lot. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really good to hear.
People just, like, you know, every time they're like, have you read Ghosted? I'm like, it's Wednesday morning. No, I haven't read it yet, you know. Just because you guys came in and stocked last night doesn't mean I get to, you know, see it.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah, so it's fantastic. I know it's being incredibly well-received. Congratulations on that.
And
we're looking forward to seeing what else you got.
Yeah, Nailbiter comes out May 7th. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, it's all horror, man. That one's going to be about serial killers, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, it's like family time.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now, where can people find you online?
On Twitter, you can find me at Williamson_Josh. The website to find me at is www.thejoshuawilliamson.com.
Perfect. All right, well, Josh, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your show.
Thanks.
And we're going to, I think we might have to get a beer to walk around the show today.
Yeah, they're right there, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Fantastic. All right, Josh, thanks again, man.
Yeah. Thanks. See ya.
Are we recording or are we still checking? Check.
We're recording.
Okay.
Well, it's all live. It's totally live.
Yeah. Professionalism at its best.
It's all happening.
Yeah, so Tony and Derek here again on the last day at C2E2, talking with Kevin Mellon, who we attempted to record last night, but we decided to stand outside in Chicago where, you know, it's that town called the
Big Apple, isn't it?
Yeah, the Breezy City. It was Breezy.
Oh, is that the name of it?
Yeah.
They call it the Tepid Breeze City.
Yeah. Yeah. It was windy as shit last night, and so we're actually going to re-record. So
I think the wind was as drunk as we were.
It was as angry as we were drunk.
Yeah.
I'll give it that.
That's, yeah, true.
Yeah. So, Kevin, tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and and all the fun stuff.
Well, my name is Kevin Mellon. I storyboard for the TV show Archer, and I make comics. Currently, I'm promoting my book Suicide Sisters, which is about two sisters driving across Texas on their motorcycles, trying to find the devil so they can get their souls back.
So, like, good family fun.
Yes. Yeah. Fun for the whole family. Just two girls shooting a lot of demons in the face.
Now, are you self-publishing this one?
Yeah, I am. It's one of those things where everything else I've done, like, you know, like six, seven books over the last six, 7 years, and I'd never tried self-publishing. And also, you know, I just kind of wanted to put it out as I got it done rather than having to be beholden to any sort of schedule. So, yeah.
How is self-publishing right now?
I'm bad at it in the sense that, like, since I've got the job on Archer and all that, I'm not really promoting it as much as I need to. It's literally just me putting it out, a couple hundred people buying it and stuff like that. So it works out that way, you know. But in order for me to be successful at it, like, I'd have to be, like, full-time job promoting and all that. So
yeah, sneaking in a back panel of the show, like, somehow, like, gets me on a magazine rack or something.
Right? But, I mean, I enjoy self-publishing. A lot of my favorite books that I grew up reading were self-published, stuff like that, you know, like Bone, Cerebus, and all that stuff. So it's just something I wanted to try, and also, like I said, just to get it out there in a way that wasn't beholden to anybody but me and my schedule and all that. So.
Well, and now you've worked with some other great writers too.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, I've been very lucky.
We talked last night about you and Dennis Helpless.
Yep.
and Blair Butler. You know,
yeah, and Steve Niles. So,
yeah.
And Phil Hester. So yeah.
Yeah, some fantastic writers.
Yeah,
you've been very lucky in that.
Yeah, but it's you know, I couldn't have asked for a better group of people to kind of, you know, like Dennis and I met. He worked at a comic shop in my town I was living at the time, and so we met that way and just kind of became friends and started coming up with ideas and. within about a year, we had hit on the idea for Gearhead. And neither of us had put out comics before. Like, I had gone, I went to the Kubert School and kind of got, like, burnt out on, like, drawing and for a living and all that after that. So by the time I met him, like, I was ready to get back in the game. I was tired of working a liquor store and just kind of was like, you know what, I need to actually start my career. So he and I did our first, like, my first comic published and his first comic published was ours together. So, you know.
Yeah, and it's so funny because, I mean, Dennis is so prolific right now in the industry.
Yeah.
It's almost hard to imagine a time when he wasn't around.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago, really.
No, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where as an artist, it's a lot easier to be visible, like, literally, you know, because you're showing something. And for him, as a writer, you know, it's tougher to find people like, you know, we did Gearhead, and then it took me a couple years after that to finish our next book, Lovestruck. And in between that time, he developed a ton of stuff with other people. You know, it's like he's had The Answer come out with Mike Norton. Well, that was being developed at the same, you know, so it's like he's had a lot of things over the last, like, you know, 6-7 years all just kind of hit at once within the last, like, two or three years.
And during the same time, The Answer, there was Avengers Arena.
Yeah, Avengers Arena. Yep. Yeah, and he's doing Avengers Undercover right now.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's awesome.
A question that we like to sometimes ask, especially the artists and everything, what...
licensed property?
Yeah, that question that I can't get out of my mouth because I suck at talking right now. Licensed, whatever. Any other character, if you could somehow get your hands on it to do, would be what you want.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if you want, I'll divide it up into two questions or two answers for you. Licensed property, I would love to do something in the Resident Evil franchise. I love those games. I'm one of the few people that likes the movies. You know, but as far as, like, comic stuff goes, if I could, you know, if you could teleport the editorial and whatever of that allowed New Mutants to happen, like, you know, it's like, you know, the Claremont Sienkiewicz stuff and even up through, like, you know, like the Simonson Liefeld stuff, you know, it's like I grew up reading that stuff. Like, I would love those characters, but it's one of those things where, like, doesn't exist. Yeah. Like, that's not possible. Like, you know, there's no way that, but I, you know, if I could time travel, I would go back in time and work on that book.
Yeah. You know, we were talking a little bit before, too, that Suicide Sisters, you're writing and drawing both.
Yeah.
What's the process like for you that's different where, you know, if you're working with, like, you know, Dennis or Blair and they're giving you the scripts versus you having to come up with it? Is it easier or harder? What's.
I'm a very slow writer, so it's harder to finish it. Like, writing takes me a while, and it's mostly just because, like, I don't do it every day. I draw every day, so it's a lot faster, and I have a lot better, like, you know, grasp on that skill set. So writing, it takes me a while to develop something and finish it and all that. But the difference, like, visually, script-wise, is, like, some stuff I'll write for myself where I break up the panels, and it's just, like, you know, because I know I'm going to forget what I intended. But mostly I tend to write in kind of a vague screenplay style where it's, like, block of what's going on, run the dialogue, block of what's going on, run the dialogue. And it's all very sparse, like, you know, they do this, they blah, blah, blah this, they shoot this, they run around, you know, and then dialogue and all that. So it's like, I actually prefer working that way with writers too, but like, I always tell any writer I work with, the sparser the script, the better and more fun I have, the better pages you'll get out of me, because I look at an Alan Moore script and I'm like, fuck that guy. I can't even look at it, let alone, like, read it to, like, you know. Like, there's a good story, like, Eddie Campbell told about working on From Hell. He would have his wife go through and highlight the parts he actually needed to read. Because, you know, if you look at that, it's usually, like, a sentence or two, and all the rest is just extraneous bullshit. Like, I'm not one of those people, like, I don't like wordy scripts. It's like, just give me, like, these two people in a room, here's what they say. These two people are in a car, they're driving around, here's what they say.
And if you need to make it a point that a cow walks into the room...
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. The fun part of me in the job is creating the characters in my head. Because even if you give me a script, like, the characters don't exist until I... No matter who comes up with whatever, the characters don't exist until I make them in my head, until I dress them, until I, like, figure out how they move and act, and, like, what kind of gestures they make. You know, like, until they become real in my mind and are, you know, living inside my head. So it's like... For that process to happen, I actually need less information because it allows me to kind of discover and figure them out. And that's part of what takes me so long to write, is, like, I just basically wait for the characters to talk to me.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So where can people find Suicide Girls?
Well, that would be a different thing, but they can find Suicide Sisters.
Suicide Girls. No. Wow, yeah.
No, that happens. You know, it's an easy thing to confuse. I'm waiting for them to come sue me about it, but, you know.
I've never heard of Suicide Girls. What is that?
I know, right? Suicide Sisters is suicidesisters.com, kevinmellon.com, and I'm at kmellon on Twitter.
Awesome. Cool. Well, then they can go check it out. I'm picking up a copy before I leave here.
Awesome.
And we have issue...
one and I sold out of issue two, but I will ship you issue two for free if you pay for all three.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. So, all right, cool. Kevin, thank you so much. Yeah, appreciate it. And we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, finishing up last day of the show here at C2E2. And Tony and I are here with Justin Ponser. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. So we've been wanting to talk to somebody about colors for a long time.
Okay.
And this is actually our first opportunity to talk about the coloring process with somebody that,
knows what they're talking about.
Well, yeah, no, somebody that's done a ton of work in the industry because you're everywhere.
It's been 18 years now, so I'm, I have quite a pile. People show up, you know, with stacks here, and it's weird seeing things for that, you know, I'm banging on the table in the microphone.
Oh, please.
But,
not the first time.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we'll edit this part out. They'll show up with books I haven't seen in, you know, over a decade, and it's weird. Like, I don't even have copies of some of it, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of it out there. And
what was the first book that you ever did?
You know, I always forget what the first one that I worked on was, because it was this minor title at Wildstorm. But the first one that was published was a Team 7 number 3. It was the series with Michael Golden covers. I don't know. They had a multiple Team 7 series, but...
Okay.
Yeah, it's unremarkable in its execution. Like, they were guided back in the day, too, so we were just a separation house.
Yeah.
So it's like, you'd get... I don't know how much you know. You were talking about the process. Like, back in the day, it was... They still had... they credited a colorist who they would give... or to whom they would give, like, photocopies, and they would use some of the... like the art design markers and stuff like that. They would just do marker comps. Yeah. So then they'd have a whole team of people turn over books in a couple days, because with the guides it was kept moderately consistent from person to person. So then they would just assign somebody to, they called it art directing at the time, but we weren't really an art director. It was just the process for the book to oversee and unite like the disparate styles between the people. But then, over time, that became kind of like a redundant position, as the people who were separating became skilled enough on their own to just color books. And so, eventually, you had people just working directly with the pencilers. Like, when it was during the cliffhanger era, like when they had like Danger Girl and was it Crimson and Battle Chasers and Divine Right, all those. When those launched, it was. Some of them were still guided by Joe Chido, who's super talented painter.
Yes.
And his guides are beautiful, like, holy moly. But they kind of phased it out during that time. I don't know, he decided to do a lot more of his painting stuff, and then everybody kind of had, it was almost like you went from Padawan to Jedi, and they're like, we trust you now, you know, you cut the braid off, or you're on. And so it was interesting. But it was cool, because you'd have the guys right there in the studio. And if you did things a little off or whatever, they'd just sit down with you and, you know, point, and, you know, a little more red, a little, you know, change the shape of that or whatever.
So it was a good collaborative process.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, studio work is way different in that way, yeah.
Well, and now with everything going digital and all that, and where it's not that separation, you get a little bit more artistic license, I would guess, as far as the colors, as how to necessarily do them.
Well, it's definitely, like these days, especially just because of, you know, longevity, portfolio, things like that, reputation with editors and pencilers, a lot of times they just, you know, for some of us, they just say, do your thing, and then, I mean, personally, I'm very thorough. I read through the script, I make sure that, you know, I don't do the wrong time of day, I do, you know, I look up characters for costumes and stuff, so that... Because my goal is no notes at the end. I turn it in and no corrections, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still get notes, but I get fewer than I used to, because it's been a while, and you get a rapport with certain artists and stuff. So as you learn their peeves and like what their likes, dislikes, because while I use a similar style on people, there's little things that this one likes that that one doesn't, and so on. And, you know, once you're comfortable with them and with the editorial staff, like, it's pretty easy, and it's like carte blanche, kind
of. Yeah, we ask a lot of, you know, the artists and everything, their favorites to draw, mm-hmm. as far as characters. What's your favorite to color, I guess?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I like Spider-Man, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that there's no face. So it's like, he's a little quicker, you know, as far... So, I mean, when it comes down to that, like... It's not so much a per character thing, honestly. It's like, I like interesting scenes, I like interesting lighting schemes and stuff like that, because it doesn't really matter what characters are there, you know, if it's something interesting.
Are there certain things that are harder, like much more difficult?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, for those listening, I just did a weird face and a nod, like a big, big wide, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm not used to doing audio interviews in person, so it's normally like on the phone, so I know I have to, like, I can't just point or whatever, but here I'm just like, yeah, that, oh, well, yeah, anyway, so yeah, there are a lot of things that take, that are more time consuming, like when you get things that are overlapping with layers of especially fight scenes and stuff with layers of powers and things like that, and having to like cut the layers of knockouts or glows or things off of each other and stuff can take a long time to get right. I mean, I'm a little too particular probably than I need to be, but...
Might be why you're working on so many books then, because people like it.
Right, I know, but, you know, my wife's not a fan of the whole, like, oh, you're not coming to bed again? Okay, you know, that kind of thing.
You've heard that comment a few times over the last 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. It's not uncommon. Well, because unlike, you know, if you're able to just, like, and it's go-home time, like, that doesn't work home, and it's like... Any moment you could be working, you could be making your page better, you could be, you know, so it's hard to unplug when you're done. Because yeah. You always go like, well, I could put a little more juice into this, or, you know.
You never truly leave the office.
No, you don't. Yeah. You don't. I know that I didn't even come up with this quote, but I've heard it and I love it, is like, issues aren't turned in so much as they're taken away. Like, at some point, they just like, we have to print this, you know, so yeah. It's like... You know, you could always, especially in the digital age where it's infinitely editable, and that was a big shrug with another face.
a half eye roll.
Yeah, a little. Yeah. I was trying, but, you know, you can constantly, if you're a perfectionist, you can constantly revise and revise and revise. And it's like, at some point, you just have to, like, call it. And that's, I mean, that's a lot of what the editor's job is. It varies what they have to do for different artists, but for me, it's always like they have to just like pressure me to give them the last pages, because they're just like, it's yeah. always way after when I said I'd turn it in. Not on purpose. It's just because I'm trying to make it best it could be.
But how many books a month would you say is your workload, or that you feel?
I try to keep it to 3, because last year I was a couple times I tried to do 4 for a couple months, and it's just too much, because once you get covers or you get these other incidental things, or even just emailing is something, it's like ghost time, because you're not getting paid, but it's definitely a part of the job that you have to take care of, like coordinating, file trafficking, stuff like that. And so when I'm mentally, because when I'm mentally planning, you know, how long these things are going to take me and stuff like that, I don't know that mentally was necessary in that sentence. That's why I paused there. I'm like, is this redundant? But when I'm planning that out, I forget to take into account, oh yeah, well, there's going to be an hour and a half of emailing today, you know, and there's going to be an hour of like getting files from this place to that place and downloading and re-uploading and all this kind of stuff.
And then occasionally, I know, like, we saw you colored a couple of the pages in the All New X-Men, uh-huh. 25, yeah, yep. So, you know, extra page here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, I mean, yeah, when I get a free week, it's like I got 11 pages from that X-Men issue. I had like 3 or 4 covers that week. Like, the editors see that you're free and just start going like, hey, you want to take this? Hey. And inevitably I'm like, sure. And then I start counting up what I agreed to, and I'm like, oh my God, what did I do to myself? You know, this was supposed to be my week off kind of thing, you know, and to recover, and, you know, whoops. But yeah, so I try to keep it to 3. That seems to be not comfortable, but it's full enough that, you know, that I usually get it done.
Well, I think we're holding up the line here a little bit, so we're going to cut this off here.
Okay.
Justin, thank you so much. Where can people find you online?
The best place to interact with me for comic purposes is facebook.com/jpocolors.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the interview.
All right. Thanks, welcome, guys. It was nice talking to you.
Keep it up.
All right. Thank you.
All right, listeners, me and Derek are still continuing our epic journey of interviews here at C2E2. And today we are sitting down with Claudio and Chandra to talk about Translucid, a book that we reviewed just over a week ago because it just came out, mm-hmm. and how epically amazing that it is.
Yeah, so Chandra Eckert, Claudio Sanchez, the co-writers on this book, and it's from Boom Studios, if you guys didn't hear the last week's episode. And I got to tell you, I love this book. It kind of hit me out of the blue. Wasn't really expecting. And the first thing I want to ask on this is when I was going through, because I was talking to actually some friends about the book last night, and they're like, you know, well, what's it about? And, you know, for us, we always try to do the elevator pitch, which I'm sure you guys have down pretty well by this point.
We try. Yeah.
But it falls in the superhero realm, but it's more about the relationship between the hero and the villain. Mm-hmm. And it feels, the thing I thought was cool is that it's more from the perspective of the hero, in this case, who's called the Horse. And it seems very reminiscent of almost a Batman and Joker, mm-hmm. you know, style story. So is that kind of the feel that you're going for?
A little bit. I mean, when the idea of the story actually came about, I wrote a song for the Arkham City Batman video game. Where I was asked to, you know, they gave me the script and they were like, okay, well, just something that's inspired by the game. And so I kind of focused very much on the relationship of the Batman and the Joker, and what would the world be like? What would Batman's existence be like should he lose him? Mm-hmm. You know, and so that was kind of, you know, I had a lot of fun writing the song, and so from there I thought, you know, well, that's kind of a story I would like to tell. Only the outcome, I don't know if it would work for a Batman story. So that's when we kind of came up with the idea of Translucid. Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely hints of Batman and the Joker.
Yeah.
And it's nice when you know, when you create your own property, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have to be tied into the history mm-hmm. of it, and then also fear the wrath of the fanboy if you do something wrong.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Fear of the fanboy. Yeah, you know, Claudio's been a fan of the Killing Joke too mm-hmm. for so long, and it was this relationship he's always been really enamored with. And for me, you know, I'm just interested in kind of relationships between characters anyway. So yeah, it was a really cool chance with Boom to kind of explore that dynamic further and let people get to know the characters a little bit.
One of the things that I'm always curious about, and we've been lucky enough to talk to people here recently, well, one in particular from Arkea, part of the whole Boom Studios group, is we talked to Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing on their book Hacktivist. As co-writers, what is that like? It's a totally different process rather than having, you know, your own idea and you sit there and script. How do you two work together when you're working on Translucid?
Well, I mean, first off, I think, well, Chandra and I are married, so, like, we're collaborators in life. So,
we found our stride a little bit. Yeah, you know, basically we'll have an idea, you know, however crazy it is, or multiple ideas, and start to fine-tune things that just aren't working in general, or stories that, you know, seem awesome on the surface, but there's nothing really tangible there. And then we'll streamline it into kind of a rough outline and start scripting and work with our editors there. But from a personal standpoint, it's definitely like a dancing act. We feel we've perfected. This is our third title together that we've written. So just being able to utilize like 24 hours a day, you know, maybe we're sleeping and he wakes me up and I have an idea, let's get up, let's work.
That's got to be one of the nice parts, though, you know, in the fact that it's the husband and wife team that are working together, because you could be cruising down the street going to the store and going, holy crap, wait,
yeah, absolutely.
What do you think of this?
And we're always working, you know what I mean? Like, we're on vacation.
There's no off switch.
No, and it's not because we don't, you know, want to take a vacation, but it's because I think if you're creative people, you guys understand, like, you're constantly on, and it's what you love to do. So we're sitting by the pool in Hawaii, we're still coming up with ideas.
And obviously coming up with your own ideas is always great, but sometimes, you know, we ask a lot of artists this, what would be their famous, you know,
things, property that they got right now that they would be able to draw? You know, some people pick Spider-Man or Iron Man. Is there any property that's out there that you've always said, man, I'd like to have a run with that. I'd like to do a story arc.
I mean, we'll see. I think Batman is definitely one of them. I've had multiple story ideas for that character and certain villains. Green Lantern is another. If I had to go to the other side of the fence, I'd probably do. I kind of like, being with Coheed and the science fiction sort of counterpart to what I do. I like the story. I also like the stories that kind of reside in space and are very sci-fi. So I'd probably go with like a Galactus or a Silver Surfer kind of story. Fantastic Four would be one. Maybe Wolverine.
And for a quick side note, you mentioned your band. So for people that are listening that might not know, you're actually in a band.
Yes, I am in a band.
Yeah, some people may have heard of it. Moderate success, I think. So
that is, well, if we're going to quick talk about that, the quick question is, obviously now that Armory Wars is done, any new thoughts on a concept for a new album, possibly taking Translucid, or are you going to still stick with?
No, I mean, I'll still reside in Amory. I mean, I still have, we're going to adapt the fourth part, Good Apollo 1, and the follow-up. We still have to adapt those into comics, and possibly the prequel story of Coheed and Cambria, the Year of the Black Rainbow, will get adapted from prose to graphic. And the most recent record we did is actually like a history of Heaven's Fence, where the comic, where the story sort of resides, where the character of Cyrus Amory, the guy that discovers the power source to Heaven's Fence, it's basically his story. It's called The Afterman. So eventually we'll kind of adapt that as well. So, but I'm going to continue to stay within the world of the Amory, though it's concluded, with No World for Tomorrow. There are other avenues I can take to keep it alive, and with Coheed, I can't really see Coheed without that counterpart.
Yeah.
You know, it's been so many records, and so I'll
continue. The beauty of the Amory Wars is that it's, you know, Coheed and Cambria are just two characters within this enormous universe, so potentially it could go on forever.
Yeah.
That's speaking one thing, too, with the band. Like, I just find that concept crazy, amazing, and awesome that it's from, well, obviously, you know, you created the comic, but, like, taking the concept for a band and doing that, and do you enjoy more of the art side, or I mean the writing side of the comics, or more of the rock part of like the band stuff? Like, what do you feel is more creative for you?
Well, I mean, they're a little bit of both, because you know the songs will really inspire what ends up on the page, and it might not be verbatim, like the lyrics are like printed in the dialogue on the page, but I mean most of the concepts are definitely drawn from those things, so they really work hand in hand, you know. And like, if there are moments where I'm sort of stuck on, say, a musical piece of whatever, and I just I've hit a wall, you know, I can always go to the other side of it and work those things out, and then that'll sort of help inspire, you know, the part that I might be stuck on. So
on a weekly basis, you've got him in the other room like, I quit! I'm quitting music! I'm quitting comics the next week! You know, it's nice to be able to divorce something for a hot second and then come right back.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about, you know, Coheed and Cambria being able to pretty much go forever as far as the stories. With Translucid, is this a limited run? Is this... I thought I saw it was a 6-issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
is there a definitive end, or is it a 6-issue miniseries with the potential to go on?
Well, you know,
without giving too much.
Yeah, I mean, if we left it at the 6 issues right now, it would be a very romantic, poetic sort of close. You know, it would be perfect.
Yeah, it would be I think, you know, not speaking for both of us, but I think it would be the right way to close the series. Because if we pick it back up, it's going to be a completely different story.
Okay.
You know, it'll feel like what Translucid is so contained and kind of, it has closure. If we were to open back up, it would feel like, okay, this is a different story altogether.
Yeah.
You kind of find out that Translucid is like an origin within an origin. So there's like, you know, you'll see what I'm saying when you come to the end. But that's like, you know, you're reading it and you're like, okay, well, I can see that this is sort of mimicking the origin of what this character might have been. But then you find out at the end, you're like, oh, wait a second, it's not really his.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah.
Do you guys got any other projects that you're planning on maybe, you know, putting
that,
out
that
there?
You can talk about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're working on trying to do Good Apollo one at the moment for Amory. That's been taking a little longer than we thought. You know, it's just a tough story. I mean, because that story sort of splits into two parallels where you see it from the writer's perspective, who the characters believe is this divine entity, and how those two things sort of work together. And so it's just been a little tough.
We're working on a follow-up to Key of Z, which was a four-part, put out last year. I think it ended last year. It's a zombie series set in Manhattan. Our elevator pitch is kind of Game of Thrones meets Night of the Living Dead.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's like kind of like all the arenas around Manhattan Island, Citi Field, Yankee Stadium, Madison Square Garden have all been colonized, and everybody's sort of warring for control over Manhattan Island. And so that story concluded with, it was called the Subway Series, Key of Z Subway Series. And so our main character, Nick Ewing, is now traveling down the East River, and he's going to find himself in Brooklyn. So then we're going to hit the Barclays and then travel up the Hudson to the Meadowlands.
Speaking of zombies, a question that we sometimes just pose at the end of some interviews is, do you guys have a zombie plan? And if so, mind sharing that?
You know, I don't have a zombie plan.
We're totally unprepared for the apocalypse.
See, that's the thing.
Don't even have a go bag?
Well, you know, Claudio's only weapon that he feels really comfortable using are these Wolverine claws that we sleep with under the bed.
Yeah, but I see, here's my thing, is that that it's so erratic, the idea of, I think a plan would slow you down. If you have like a bag or a this or a that you need to survive something like that, immediately your brain is going to map itself out to get that thing. And it's like, I don't know if you need any anchors in something like
true.
That.
True. Also, yeah. To be fair, we're in 6 weeks, we're going to have a fresh baby. So I think if the apocalypse happens, we're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Very true. We're done.
One more question. I know we've got to let you go because you have to go do a sign in here. On the creative process of this book, because Daniel Bayless did the art on this, which is beautiful, and the colors by Adam Metcalf popped that art right off the page. What's your relationship status with him as far as the working relationship with Daniel? Is it something where you have the script, you send it, and then he takes it out from there, or is there a collaborative process at all involved?
I mean, I think...
Yeah, we definitely, you know, with our artists, we like to pick artists that we feel understand the story we want to tell and are really sort of masters of what they do. So for us, yeah, you know, we'll send over a relatively detailed script, but we're not, with Daniel specifically, we're not telling him, you know, this is the size panel we want necessarily. From time to time, we'll throw that out there. But we want to really give him sort of the space to exist and to create and to tell the story the best way that we can do it.
Yeah.
And he's been killing it.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous. And I mean...
Well, that's, I was going to say, that's one of the things where when you're picking up a brand new story, you don't know what the story's going to be, so art's usually the first thing that you see when you flip through the pages. And that's when I picked this up at my shop. I was like, man, this art is amazing. I just got to read it. And then I was like, gorgeous. Oh, and the story's got me hooked. So
and the colors, like, just really take you kind of from the different, you know, flashback to present day to, you know, all these different elements.
And as the tension rises, the color gets more and more vivid. Mm. And it was really, really amazing. You know, and it's like, we talked about the art. The one thing that I've been praising Boom for the last year in particular is that for the most part, if a new book comes out from Boom, I grab it because the quality is there, and this book is no exception to the rule. It's absolutely fantastic. So I know we've got to let you go because you guys have to get up. You've got, you know, lines of fans waiting. Tony,
but for our listeners, where can they find you? Where can they contact you if they want to?
We have Twitter handles.
Yeah. We're very active on social media.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Claudio P. Sanchez. Chandra's is
at Shawnee E.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, you know, Boom Studios, you can pick up all of our books on their website. We have a personal website, everythingevilinc.com. Yeah, we're around. We're just waiting to hear from you.
And people at home listening, if your comic shop didn't have this, I know you can get it digitally, but if they didn't have it, go back and ask them to order this book for you. You will not regret reading it.
All right, well, cool. Thank you guys so much. Yeah, we hope to hear from you guys at another convention.
Yeah, cool. Please, we're all around.
Right. Thank you.
All right.
All right, it feels now that we're going to come full circle on interviews here.
How do you mean?
Well, we're interviewing Chris Mewis and Ryan Lee, and they were actually the very first interview that we did.
Really?
Yeah.
So does this mean this is going to be the last interview we ever do then, if we're coming full circle?
Well, maybe with them, I don't know. But, yeah, so what's going on, gents?
Just hanging out. It's the last day. It's been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is our best con that we've ever been to of, like, the three or four. Definitely the best, though.
Well, as long as they just keep getting better.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way you go.
I'll take it.
So, you guys have a new book out called The Naturals.
We do.
And yep. Chris, you know, since you're the brains behind the brawn, well, maybe, I don't know. You want to fill people in on what The Naturals is?
Yeah, so The Naturals is a wartime epic that takes place in an alternate history where each country had a super-powered soldier fighting in their military, except for Germany, and that's part of the reason they lost World War I. So now there's a German scientist who's trying to get revenge by hunting down The Naturals and killing them and obtaining their power so he can be Germany's protector.
Cool. Now, this book is actually originally come out as a webcomic, where it's one page. How often was it?
It's bi-weekly now.
Okay.
It was weekly for a little bit, but
it switched
working
sides.
On some different, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Working on some different projects and stuff, so we went to that so that we could kind of keep it a little more timely.
Okay. And you you did print off, actually, the first issue.
Yes, we did.
We're actually on our second print run of it. We sold out of the first print already.
It's because you guys are rock stars. I mean, come on. Yeah, so what is coming up with The Naturals? I mean, now, is this going to be a limited series? Is there a definitive end, or is it...
Oh, yeah, I have an ending figured out. I haven't decided how many issues it will take to get there, probably around 4 or 5, maybe.
Okay.
But we're doing the issues as 32 pages, so I can actually do fewer issues instead of... you know, more issue. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, they're a little beefier books. Get a little more bang for your buck, and it's nice to read them in a bigger chunk, I think, usually.
Yeah.
Well, besides The Naturals, is there anything else coming up that you guys might be working on soon that you can let our listeners know?
Nothing for me, really, right now. I have some scripts I'm working on. Don't really have much detail on those, but sticking with The Naturals for now.
And Terror Bads is still going, isn't it?
No.
No? Is it all done?
It's...
Or on hiatus?
It's on hiatus right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan, what about you?
I've been working on... I've been doing some coloring for some books, and I've drawn a couple of stories for some anthologies. I'm working on a pitch with some friends of mine right now, and I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that, but I can't really say much more about it. Not that it's anything that's secret or anything, but...
you don't have to tell them that.
It's secret.
It's really secret.
But it's secret. It's really secret.
And you just recently did a variant cover for Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I did. Yep, for IDW. I've been sending them samples for the past couple of years, and... something finally stuck, and they got an email one day to do. They thought it'd be a good fit for it.
Nice.
There it is.
Definitely, listeners, you should check out his art because it is amazing. I am looking at this awesome, awesome picture of a gun plus some person holding it. But the main focus is this gun that Cable is holding with the air freshener on it. It's unreal.
Well, and I got which actually it'll be posted online later. My Typhoid Mary commissioned from me this weekend, which was awesome. So, cool. Where can people go find your work, guys?
The webcomic is at www.thenaturalscomic.com.
Yep, and you can find my work. I post a lot of stuff to Instagram, which is RyRyLeeArt on Instagram, or I have like a million sites now. It's almost like you need all of them. RyLeeArt on Tumblr.
And Twitter
at RyLeeArt, and also RyRyLeeArt www.blogspot.com. So that's a mouthful of Rye Rye's.
Are you going to get the Rye Rye Wee Wee art?
That's coming up soon, yes.
Dude, let's take that.
Yeah. Well, guys, I just want to say thank you for being our first interview, and I guess since Derek said it, yep, we're done now.
All right.
No more Drunk on Comics.
That was a great show, guys.
It was a good run. It was a good run, yeah. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, stop. Collaborate and listen.
Drunk on Comics is back with
a brand new edition.
Ooh, something. Yeah. Drunkenly nightly.
Flows like my pee stream. I don't know.
Really tightly. All right, we're not good at rapping, so.
No, we're terrible. Of course, maybe if we planned something out in advance once, ever. Yeah.
Yes. Hopefully, you guys love this interview process or interviews of, I mean, I'm just kind of sad because we're done now. As we mentioned in that last interview, there's going to be no more Drunk on Comics. But teaser, the all-new, very special Drunk on Comics.
Now.
0.0125.
Yeah, the new 100. Because, well, yeah, I mean, come on. You know, by the time, like, we've got the 100th episode coming up this weekend.
Yes, we do.
So I think 101, we should do the all new Drunk on Comics, now new 52.
Okay, we could do something like that.
Point one.
Other numbers too. 8675309.
And we'll put random letters in there. You know?
Just because.
Oh, dude, we could do that. This could have been drunkoncomics.c2e2.
Oh, because it has numbers and letters.
Yeah. And then we, like, the next one we can do will be drunkoncomics.mccc25, because it'll be their 25th anniversary of Motor City Comic Con.
All right. Well, listeners, don't fret. We are still here, and we are going to still do a lot more interviews during this con season.
You got it. All right, guys, make sure you tune in here later this week so you can hear the special 100th episode of Drunk on Comics.
It should be a good one.
Well, it should, yeah. You live with all